I'd like to welcome you all to this SACPA session. I am your moderator today, Tom Kane. And the usual thing, you should put in $10. Somebody at our table was going to sneak in $8, so he hasn't paid for a while. So make sure that it's $10 in the basket, and make sure everybody at the table pays. This is a volunteer organization, SACPA, and we rely on contributions from members and session attendees like yourselves today. We acknowledge our partners, the University of Lethbridge, for support, including the distribution of notices, and thanks to Country Kitchen Catering for preparing the lunch. As usual, the format will be a presentation for 25 to 30 minutes by Adele, and then the lunch, and then a question period beginning close to 1 o'clock for a half an hour. Our speaker today is Adele Boucher-Rimes. She's a former teacher and businesswoman, was a partner in farming and bison ranching for many years. She served on the executive of the Peace River Board of Trade, was president of Peace River Country Bison Association, and on the local museum board. That was all before nuclear came to town a couple of years ago. And then she had been interested in politics and has run different times for the NDP. More recently, she ran as the NDP candidate in Peace River in the federal election. And her platform strongly supported concerns for the environment and sustainable alternatives to nuclear power. Adele was a candidate in the March 2008 provincial election, also carrying the nuclear-free banner. And she actually told me privately that one of the reasons she ran was to try and get the message out, because there's a lot of resistance in the media to get the message out in Peace River unless you happen to be in favor of nuclear power. She currently serves as the Secretary of Citizens Against Nuclear Development, CAND, a group of over 250 residents near the proposed nuclear site at Grimshaw, and she's one of those 250 residents. As well, she's Vice President of Nuclear Free Alberta, feeling that you have to go beyond just Grimshaw to try and get attention to make sure the Alberta government doesn't make a mistake, in her opinion. A member of the Peace River Environmental Society, and I've looked at their website after Jim Harding spoke here in April, when he had written his book about nuclear power and our deadly Canadian secret. I went to the Peace River website to get all sorts of information, both on nuclear matters and on other related alternatives to nuclear power. Their website is www.peaceriverenvironmentalsociety, you have to say, spell out the whole thing, .org. Her topic today, I should say there was one other thing that she mentioned just this morning that she's kind of proud of. That was before all this stuff about nuclear came to town. She was already recognized as a contributing citizen in the North. She received the Queen's Golden Jubilee Medal in 2003 for her contribution to her community in the Peace River District, and presented by the Member of Parliament for Peace River. So her topic today is, should Alberta be kept free of nuclear power? Without further ado, we give a warm welcome to Adele Boucher-Rimes.
I hope you can hear me, because you may not see me behind this podium. First off, I would like to thank the council for inviting me here today. I've looked at SACPA's website for some time and have been highly impressed with the wide variety of topics and speakers that show up at this body. Every community would benefit greatly by having an inspirational council that brings forward issues that face Albertans and Canadians. And as Tom mentioned, coming from a small community that is somewhat gagged in terms of public relations with the media, we certainly appreciate having a forum to be able to speak to the topic without being censored. As to today's topic, should Alberta be kept free of nuclear power, my answer is a definite yes. we must keep Alberta nuclear free. As one of the residents that do live in close proximity to that plant, I have looked into nuclear power projects in many other parts of North America, and it's very disturbing. Many places have what is called an emergency preparedness plan if you live within 10 miles of such a plant. Looking at the population here, I'll talk in miles rather than kilometers. I live within that 10-mile danger zone of the proposed plant, and this plant is supposedly anywhere from 2 to 4 reactors, or from 2,000 to 4,000 megawatts of production. Takes an extremely large amount of water. The proposed site originally was on Lac Cardinal, which is about 5 feet deep and covers maybe half of a township, you know, like 2 miles wide and 3 miles long. And we were all horrified and said, in 2 weeks the lake will be dry, you know. Nuclear plants consume a lot of water, and when the original group looking for a site came to our area, we learned of the criteria for a nuclear plant. There are 5 issues. Number 1 being water, a plentiful supply of water. And in addition to the little lake that I talk about, we live on what is called the Grimshaw Gravels Aquifer, a gravel base that has a flow of water through it from a set of hills about 30 miles away from the Peace River, and then all the water moves towards the Peace. And we have, in most places, maybe 15 feet of soil over top of the gravel base. So anytime an industry were to puncture this gravel aquifer, there is a severe risk of contamination of that water supply. There are 7,500 households that live on that water supply, including 4 towns and villages and 5 water co-ops. Co-ops meaning they've organized it so you can have the water piped to your house. My family's lived in the Peace Country since about 1930, and we've always just had a well on the aquifer, and, you know, you dug a hole and put a pump on top and you had water. So people are very, very concerned that this is going to be contaminated. The use of the river from the Peace River has implications as well, in that the Peace River has water as part of the Mackenzie water system and into the Arctic Ocean. So anything that happens to the Peace is in the long term going to go around the world in the water supply. Our group formed mostly out of indignation at not being considered when this project came to light, and we have found even more as we go along that the integrity of the nuclear industry is at stake here. A lot of things happen in secret, in closed meetings. We sort of get told about it afterwards. And so the push by the nuclear industry in general to control what happens has caused a lot of people to fear what's happening. There's a fear in terms of your actual health, but there's also a fear in terms of the loss of power, loss of control. We know that the Canadian government has already agreed to a thing called the Global Nuclear Partnership, and our Prime Minister has been in contact with the Americans and other people in the nuclear field. Part of this Global Nuclear Partnership says that he who supplies the uranium will be liable to look after the spent fuel afterwards. And Canada, being the largest producer of uranium in the world, could be held liable for a lot of spent fuel coming back. And that's probably the greatest danger, other than the loss of water, is how to handle spent fuel. We call it radioactive waste, but the industry calls it spent fuel. They have all this only partially burned fuel that was in the nuclear reactors, and it has great potential if they come up with a new version of a reactor that could reburn some of the leftover fuel. So we hear that they burn about 4% of the energy that's in fuel rods and the rest is stored. It kind of keeps on perking as well. So for about the first 10 years when nuclear fuel rods are taken out of a reactor, they're stored in canisters underwater. And so most nuclear facilities in the world have a pool someplace and they have these canisters of water there. The nuclear industry will tell you, oh, don't worry about it. They hardly cover 6 football fields. And we're thinking, yes, but each one of those canisters has the potential, you know, to contaminate and be utilized for other purposes. There's always that idea that somebody would like that spent fuel that's actually processed uranium for nuclear weapons. In fact, Canada sold CANDU reactors to some countries in the world under the pretense of creating electricity for their countries, and in fact that country then just used that processed fuel that was left over to go on and fuel their nuclear arms program. So this is not an issue that just affects us in Grimshaw. We were accused right off the bat of saying, oh, you guys have the NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. Well, after we learned what could happen in our backyard, we would not wish it on anyone else in their backyard. So the concept that we would have to look after long-term waste is very troublesome. After canisters cool, so to speak, in water, then they're often transferred to something like a cement, should we call it a bunker, a container made out of cement. In many places of North America where these are being stored, particularly in Hanford in Washington State, right next to the Columbia River, a lot of these canisters and the cement bunkers are already letting that toxic waste leach into the ground and it moves with the water supply. That's happening in places like France and Germany where people are trying to store it. In the world, there is no known safe means of storing this toxic waste that's left over. It's radioactive, and it is dangerous to human health. Recently in Calgary, there was a speaker, Dr. Helen Caldicott, who was nominated for the Nobel Prize for her efforts in trying to educate people about the dangers of nuclear. It brings to mind Nobel himself. Alfred Nobel made a lot of money after he invented dynamite, trinitrotoluol, but he had such a guilt complex over the damaging effects that dynamite had if it were not used for proper purposes that he actually used a good part of his fortune to set up the Nobel Prizes in the world. And now here's someone fighting nuclear power being eligible for the prize for about the same reason. The aquifer group that we deal with in our area just appalled us in the sense that they would allow this plant to be on the aquifer itself. And so we sort of took them to task, and many of the people on the board were not aware of the mandate of that board, which is to make sure that the aquifer is neither contaminated nor depleted. And when we brought this to their attention, they said, well, we've already sort of given our support to the project. They, being a rep from each of the municipalities in the area that gets its water from the aquifer, had already given support to the initial proposal by Energy Alberta, a Calgary-based company, to put this site close to the or on the aquifer. So we have called for them to go back to their municipalities and ask that any land that falls within the aquifer be disqualified as a site for nuclear development. And most local authorities can have, should we see, designation of what their land will be used for. We've also asked the Aquifer Management Board to apply for intervener status with the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency and put forward the reasons why the aquifer is not suitable for a facility. Water is crucial to everybody, and for example, the United Nations has a proclamation about water not being a sellable commodity. And in a sense, that's what's happening if the water in our area is just used for, you know, the cooling of the nuclear plant. United Nations predicts that by 2025, there will be a water shortage all over the world. we're still okay up north because we have that big river, but I flew down here yesterday and I can see that you're in a much different situation than we are. The prospect of this plant in our backyard raises a lot of concerns with people over their future lifestyle, the health of their children, the, let's say, health of the soil, the animals, etc. The Peace Country is agricultural and has what is known as branding the peace as a marketing technique. And it's based on the idea that the Peace Country is known for its pristine growing conditions. So we think we'll have difficulty trying to promote products raised in the peace when there's a nuclear plant down the road. When you think of the effect of any nuclear plant and base it on the major accident that happened in Chernobyl 22 years ago, wind carries fallout from this type of accident to many places. If something happened where we live and the wind happened to come from the northwest that day, it might not take long to go down the whole, you know, interior prairie region of Canada. Generally, fallout goes about 450 miles in a radius, not a diameter. So 450 miles from Peace River goes south of Edmonton even. And when we look at the programs, as I mentioned, in the States that are called the Emergency Preparedness Plans, the first activity that is involved is to issue people who live within that 10-mile danger zone with a type of anti-radiation pill. It's called potassium iodide, and you walk around with them in your pocket the rest of your life if you live in proximity to that plant. Because in the event of an accident, or in the States, people are much more aware of terrorism activities. If something happened at one of these plants, you pop these pills and it saturates the thyroid to prevent absorption of radioactive iodine, and supposedly, you know, would save you to a certain extent. There are side effects to the pill itself, but they're not as bad as absorbing the total brunt of this radioactive iodine. Children under 3 years of age are 3 times as susceptible to this kind of contamination as adults are, and any lactating mammal is at higher risk, meaning nursing mothers and, for example, dairy cattle, because of the tissue in the mammary glands being more fatty and ingesting, I guess, iodine more than for the rest of us that are adults and, you know, are not in that stage. Immediate advice to farmers is to say, well, bring your cattle inside. Keep them in a structure that will not allow contamination to settle on them. Try to have a building that doesn't have an exchange of air from the outside. We have a very large dairy farm in the Peace Country. They have 400 head of dairy cattle. There's no way that they could keep 400 head of cattle indoor without opening the windows for a minimum of 48 hours, is what the emergency preparedness plan says. So, the nuclear industry says, there'll never be an accident like that, and we hope there never would be, but people have to know that there is this risk. These potassium iodide pills are sold by the thousands to the U.S. military, and they are shipped to most of the military people in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, wherever there are missiles that have a nuclear warhead to them. Because there's a lot of contamination going on in those areas. You read quite often about the amount of cancer that is occurring among the civilian population in areas where that kind of weaponry is used. Sometimes we're sort of overwhelmed with the amount of pressure that has been put on our community. A lot of people, for example, Chamber of Commerce groups, are coming out with public statements in support of the nuclear plant, which then causes a little friction between people who just go into a store to do business, and the person in the store, as an owner and a member of the Chamber of Commerce, says, and I've had it said to me, so, I hear you're on the wrong side of the fence. I've actually walked out and not done business in a couple of places because I think that we have a right to be expressing our concerns. It's not as if we're saying your business shouldn't be involved, but if your business is going to benefit at the expense of other people's health, then we feel that there needs to be a closer look at this. So in the community, we've almost come up with the comparison that this is health versus wealth. Many people are concerned about their future, the future of their children. And it's now pointed out on a worldwide scale with people like Dr. Helen Caldicott and a fellow that just came from Germany and gave us his results. Dr. Ernest Ludwig Ischinius has done research for 20-some years in Germany to compare levels of cancer and leukemia in children that live in close proximity to the plants. There are 16 plants in Germany. And if you imagine the size of Germany in comparison to Canada, that means those plants are pretty close together. Wherever you live, you're fairly close to a nuclear plant. The rate of cancer was extremely high for anyone that lived within 5 miles of a plant, not quite as high within 10 miles, still abnormal within 20 miles, and their survey didn't, you know, go beyond that. And these kind of medical statistics are what worry a lot of people. There are many families that have children. There are many young families who are yet to have children. And if, for example, you are, so to speak, ingesting some forms of the radioactivity and it affects your genetics, it might not be you that shows problems, it may be the next generation. Or your children marry some other children that grew up in the same vicinity, and then your grandchildren start showing genetic mutations. We had a visit from a neighbor to a nuclear plant in Ontario who came to the Peace Country, spoke with our groups and to the groups in Whitecourt, and he gave some examples of what's happening. He lives in cottage country in northern Ontario, not the far north, but, you know, outside of Toronto. And in just his natural habitat around there, dandelions now grow with 6 flowers on one stem, and the stem is about as big around as a carrot, but is hollow. All the material that would have been in 6 individual stems has been put into sort of one big stem, and on top of that, 6 flowers sit there. That's a mutation. Turkeys in the wild, when you go hunting in that area, are seen running around, and instead of having one of the gobbledy things that, you know, rattles around under their chin, they have 3 of them. They have 3. It's a mutation. Studies have been made on trees that grow in that area where you take a sample of a tree and analyze the rings of it and look at the chemical composition at each layer that would have been placed there, you know, annually. And they can relate the chemical composition of the tree directly to the year that the first plant was built, the second plant was built, the third plant was built, the fourth plant. There are 8 in that area. When one went down, when 2 went down, related to production of heavy water versus when the plant was producing no heavy water, things like that. So there is scientific evidence that shows the environment is being affected. It seems to be just how long will it go on before it is, you know, that much more severe. We don't want to take that risk. Right now, when we say keep Alberta nuclear free, the status quo is nuclear free. To change it is going to take a big change. We're quite upset with the provincial government whose energy minister often says to us, we've had a few visits in the legislature, and the Minister of Energy says the Alberta government is neither a proponent nor a detractor of nuclear power. However, the Alberta government has signed an agreement with the U.S. Department of Energy to do research in their nuclear facilities in Idaho. And the purpose of these studies is to look at the effects that nuclear power could have if we utilized it in terms of the oil sands in the tar sands. I'm sorry, we don't say oil sands anymore. We say tar sands. Everyone says it. This project has potential to study how nuclear reactors would provide steam used in thermal tar sands extraction and for production of hydrogen that is used in bitumen upgrading. So that's one of the ways in which supposedly these nuclear plants in Alberta would be used. And I say these because I know that earlier in the last couple of years you did have a presentation by a proponent of nuclear power whose 60-page report went to several influential conservatives, and the recommendation is to build about a dozen nuclear plants in northern Alberta, about 40 miles apart, and sort of create a ring around the tar sands, and then this would be a form of energy to help us better improve, I guess, extraction in the oil sands. I'm not a scientist, but it seems to me that we, who are in the backyard of a nuclear plant, would be paying a big price to have that energy used for that purpose. We actually were told by one of the officials for the nuclear plant in our area that they would utilize what is called the Northern Lights Intertie, which is a east-west transmission line, and this power would go to Hudson Hope in northern BC and just be fed into the grid that feeds the northwestern United States. We know that the partners that are involved with Bruce Power that is making this bid in the Peace Country are very influential and have a vested interest. TransCanada Corporation out of Calgary owns 47% of Bruce Power Alberta. TransCanada can transmit anything anywhere in North America. And the more they get to transmit, of course, the more profitable their company is. The other big partner is Cameco Uranium Corporation in Saskatchewan. They own the majority of the uranium mines there. Obviously, if they can sell more uranium, they make more money. We think that it's an outdated technology. There haven't been improvements made in the reactors for many years, I want to say 20 or 30, and yet when this company filed its application to put a site in at Peace River, they wouldn't be specific about what type of reactor they would use, and so they might use a CANDU ACR 1000. They might use technology from Aveda, which is a company in France that is the leading builder for reactors there. They might use somebody like, say, Westinghouse. There's so many mights and so many unknowns here that it has us worried. And people say, oh, well, this fear of the unknown is a little, you know, exorbitant. And we're saying, not when the fear is our fear of what they don't know. It causes a lot of, I should say, anxiety in people. We have had some effect in that one of the municipal bodies in our area had a change in councillors after the municipal elections last fall, and the municipal council then withdrew its letter of support for the proposed nuclear plant in that area of the aquifer. That municipality now tends to get a bit of criticism from the other municipalities that declared in favor of it and are still sticking by that. We have some difficulty in dealing with the issue in terms of the public, which is why I say it's been great to have a forum like this to talk about it freely. If you can believe this, the local radio station in the town of Peace River does not allow discussion of the nuclear topic unless it's in a paid advertisement. That's kind of why Tom was saying I found it helpful to take the nuclear banner into provincial elections, because you could have paid advertising that said, let's keep Alberta nuclear free. The morning man, for example, on this radio station is not allowed to say the N-word. The energy critic for the opposition in Alberta came to visit up north. She's the daughter of Grant Notley, Rachel Notley, and the radio station was, you know, happy to have her come as a guest on the morning show. But through me, they had to say, tell her, of course, we won't be able to discuss nuclear. Now, an elected member of the Legislative Assembly of Alberta wasn't really impressed with that. So she answered the questions that were asked, and when there was an opening, after talking about childcare and housing and, you know, the type of social programs, she said, well, energy is a big issue, and you're in an area that is close to the tar sands, and nuclear is not the answer to it. And she just kept on talking quickly and had her piece. And the morning man probably agreed with it, but he's not allowed to say anything, so he just said, thank you for your views. And we all heard it. I hope I'm not lamenting too much about what's in our area, because I think it is a Canadian issue. I think if you watch programs on TV, for example, W5 and there was one on the Fifth Estate just yesterday, had a good look at how nuclear in Germany is being phased out in favor of alternate forms of energy. The wind farms, the solar programs, run of river, hydroelectric power, etc. We feel this is a national issue, because if the first nuclear plant is allowed to be built in our area, it opens the door to nuclear not only for the province of Alberta, but for everything in Western Canada. And when we talk to the Alberta Electric Service Operators, that group which knows how much fuel or electricity is produced, and that group which needs it, and then they do the coordinating of it, there is no need for additional electricity in Alberta that is not already planned for. So there's like 10,000 megawatts of alternate forms of energy coming on stream in the next 10 years that will cover the need that we have. This body, AESO, has had no request from the tar sands to say they need extra power. I can see Tom is approaching, so if you feel there's a topic that you'd like to know more about, well then, that's why we're going to have question period later. Thank you for your time.
Enjoy your lunch, and please get some questions ready.